Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. I am Dr. Ed Ackerley. Matt Neely, how are you? Merry Christmas. It's that time of year.
It is that time. Merry Christmas to you.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, you guys had some fun last night, I'm sure, and the season is upon us. I was at Winter Haven, and I was looking at the beautiful lights, Tucson Boys Chorus doing their little presentation in Winter Haven. That was awesome.
Oh, wow.
And I also went to Leticia, had an event down in on South 12th Avenue, Nogales Highway, I guess it was. And a little Posada event, so I went to that. So nice. Feliz Navidad, as they say.
As they say in the old country.
Yeah.
And we gave a plug to the, shout out to the parking lot.
Oh, good.
At the, during yesterday's show, when we were talking about Winter Haven.
Yeah.
So.
We went there, I went there too last night and checked out. They had an interesting little story. We've had the same lot there, Coaches
Physical
for Charity.
Yeah. Physical therapy place?
Yeah. Movement for Life Physical Therapy, thanks to Lucas Fett and his group, Fett. I don't know how to say that as German as I am. And so Lisa and Jenny were out there. They were working the first night, and this lady walks across the street from the other side of the street and says, "What are you guys doing?" She told them about Coaches for Charity and that it's a fundraiser and all that. "Would you do our lot too?" So now we have two lots, each side of the street.
Horizontal integration. I love it.
And a shout out to Don Snyder, who is the former owner of the Move It for Life building. He just sent in a huge donation last night. I just want to thank Don personally for helping Coaches for Charity, especially during this season of giving. So great. If you're going to Winter Haven, we're about 1,000 yards to the west of the main entrance on Fort Lowell there. So it says Coaches for Charity, and we'd love to have that support. So we do lots of good things with the money that that we raise. Got the MLK tournament coming up January 19th at McHale Center.
Well, that'll be here before we know it.
I know. Okay, let's get going with success stories, and we want to welcome to The Morning Voice Terry Hanley, Managing Director of the Tanque Verde Ranch. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Ed. Great to be here.
Yeah, wow. Boy, what a rich history the Tanque Verde Ranch has in East Tucson and around the world, because people know the Tanque Verde Ranch.
It's pretty amazing. It's just such a pleasure to be out there every day.
Yeah. Can you give us a little bit of history of the ranch? Just some thoughts on what makes it such a special part of Tucson's heritage?
Well, the ranch is 157 years old this year, and I like to clarify that I wasn't the managing director when the ranch opened. I was the assistant managing director. So, but it's 157 years, and the Creole family originally raised cattle out there, sold it to the Converse family in the mid-20s, and they sold it to the Cote family in 1957. Mm. The amazing part to me is, in today's business world, a business that's been in Tucson for 157 years active, and only three owners.
Right.
In the hospitality business, properties can change hands 2-3 times in a year. So it's a real fun environment with the family.
We were talking about Bob Cote, who was a member of the family, who was on site there, and his wife Rita. Rita's still there. Rita was the general manager for years and helped with marketing and all that good stuff, and she's a wonderful person. She's still out there, but you're kind of handling the day-to-day and in charge of all that, and she's kind of floating around watching you, making sure you're doing a good job, right?
I am. She comes up to get her mail, and she looks at what's going on, and she smiles and walks
turns
away.
Turns around and walks away. You have the headaches. And
yes,
let her
exactly.
Have, yeah, what the Cote family have just been so wonderful in Tucson and wonderful people. So the ranch is often described as a working dude ranch. What does that mean for guests that come to stay?
So we own horses, and when you have livestock like that, you've got work to do, maintaining the horses and keeping them healthy and active. And we do a team penning event where we've got cows on property. So of course there's feeding and mucking the stalls and cleaning and making sure that everything runs the way it's supposed to.
So those people who come from out of the state or even out of the country who want to come in and get a little bit of Western heritage and kind of get involved in it, it gives them an opportunity to kind of, get into the whole cowboy thing, right?
Exactly. And there's people that come and stay with us that have had this on their bucket list for 20 or 30 or 40 years. Mm-hmm. So they come in and they get to put on their blue jeans and put on their cowboy boots and just play cowboy for a few days or a week or 2 weeks. It's a memorable experience for them.
You've got a beautiful facility there. For those people that don't know where it is, it's at the end of Speedway, basically, all the way to the east side of Speedway. and you turn a little bit to the left there, and there's a... So how big is, acreage-wise, how big is the facility?
We sit on 640 acres.
Wow.
We have 69 guest rooms.
That's a whole section, 640.
Yes,
that's a
it
whole
is.
Section in real estate, so yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
69 guest rooms. We have 180 employees, and we own 100 horses. We lease horses, an additional horses, through the winter season.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got about 175 on staff, with the four-legged folks right now.
Right. Well, we're in the holiday season, the Christmas season, and a beautiful, beautiful place to go during the Christmas season. Tell us about the decor and the sense and the feeling as you come into the Tankaverde Ranch now, with all the decor and all the beautiful lights and so forth. What's happening at just as you walk in, the atmosphere?
The day after Thanksgiving, we start. And our grounds and maintenance crew, they get out with their ladders and their lights, and the place is lit up. It's spectacular driving in now. We've got lights all the way up the driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got three Christmas trees throughout the property. It's such a great feeling. And what would be perfect, or what is always perfect around this time of year, is if we get a little dusting of snow.
Right.
It doesn't happen very often, but it's just so pretty out there when we get a dusting of snow.
That's great. So if someone made a reservation and went out to the Tankaverde Ranch and was going to stay there for a week or so, what kind of adventures would they be able to partake in? Both, maybe they're not a ranch hand and don't want to do the rustling and all that stuff, but what kind of things can they do at the Tankaverde Ranch?
Well, that's the beauty of the ranch. You can come out there, and you don't have to be a horseback rider. You can. There's so many other activities to do. We have hiking and fishing, mountain biking, archery, axe throwing. We have third-party vendors that come in that do watercolor painting, leather belt making, silversmithing. So there's something for everybody. We have a very, very robust kids program. If the kids come and stay with us, we know the parents are coming back because the kids will make sure of that.
Right.
And three different age groups, 4 to 6, 7 to 9, and 10 to 12. And the kids absolutely love the place. I think we know we've really done our job when little Johnny is on dad's shoulder crying as he gets into the car because he doesn't want to leave.
And, that's great.
It's heartbreaking, but it's so nice to see.
So you're listening to Terry, who is the managing director, is your title, Terry Hanley, managing director of the Tankaverde Ranch. So horseback riding is obviously one of the fun things. People, they may not want to do the get into the stalls and pet the horses and do all that stuff, but they might want to take a little ride. That's one of the featured things that you have, right, is being able to get out into the near the Saguaro National Monument and be out in nature, right?
Absolutely. And we do beginner rides, we do intermediate rides, we do loping, and we do team penning. As I mentioned, we'll do team penning where we've got cows on property and you work as a team to guide the cows into the chutes, and boy, it gets competitive. It's so much fun to watch the families try to beat each other in that activity.
So you have basically all kinds of guests, but everything from people who come from Europe and Germany and England and Japan, and they come out and have been, many of those people have been coming for years, and they keep coming back because they just love the experience. And certainly there for a while, Germany and Japan sent a lot of tourists this way because they really love that Western outdoor feel, and that the whole Old West thing was kind of big. It's still, but was kind of big. But then you have, people from across the country that have been coming out for years. And then, but you also have people in Tucson who use it as a staycation and go out for 2 or 3 days, 5 days, and they might live a mile away, but they still come out and enjoy. So you have a wide range of guests.
We do. We've got a couple that come out there 3-4 times a year. We've got some people from Moro Valley that come out a couple of times a year. There's people all over the city that do that.
Right.
And then our legacy guests, our guests from across the country, there's a family that comes at Christmas, and Bill passed away 2 years ago, and Bill had been to our ranch 61 consecutive years.
Wow.
With the exception of 2020 during COVID. And he was bringing his family. His family still comes, and their kids, and now the grandkids or great grandkids. And it's so much fun to see that. They are our family when they walk through the door,
right.
and they feel the same way about us. So
yeah.
Great connections through the people that we see every day or every year.
when the new babies are born, they're part of the notification. Yes. And we got a new grandkid, so they're going to come with us to the ranch this year.
That's great.
That's really great. And you also do, speaking of families, one of the big things you do out there are special events, but really, really a focus on weddings. Weddings are really good out there, and it's built a couple of beautiful venues to have a beautiful wedding. We were talking about the Cottonwood, how beautiful that is. And
yes, the Cottonwoods for the Cowboy Cookout and private events is fantastic. In 2019, we built a new building. We call it the Barn.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's beautiful, by the way.
Yeah. It is spectacular, isn't it?
Yeah.
That setting is amazing. And then we do weddings in the Saguaro Room. So there's multiple areas to do weddings.
Just out on the grass is just a beautiful, just that beautiful grass that's right by the corral there. Oh, that's just, my kids are... I hate to say this, are in their 40s, 33, and 30. And when they were little guys, man, they used to go out there and just run around on the grass.
On
they
the
had
front
so
lawn,
much
yes.
fun on the front lawn. It was really cool. So, hey, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back in just a minute. We have a caller on the line, and we'll come back and take that call. And we'll also talk a little bit more about what's going on for the holidays at Tinker Verde Ranch with Terry Hanley, the managing director. This is The Morning Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. Christmas at Tinker Verde Ranch. What a beautiful experience. Speaking of experience, Lori would like to join us for a little bit and tell us a little bit about her experience at Tinker Verde Guest Ranch. Hi, Lori.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. Tell us about your Tinker Verde Guest Ranch experience.
Yes, my daughter and her husband were married there in April. It was an Indian fusion wedding.
Wow.
And your staff was wonderful.
Well, Terry and I were here holding our. Well, I had all four of my fingers crossed when we said you're going to tell about your experience. We assumed that was going to be pleasant. So, Terry.
Lori, yeah. I appreciate your comments. We focus very, very heavily on hiring the right personalities for the jobs, and we're a top workplace winner 2 years in a row, and I agree. Our team is. They love coming out there every day, and they do an amazing job for us. And it's sincere. It's not. There's nobody's putting on a show.
Yes, it was. So there, his family is from England, and they wanted the full Western experience.
That's great.
So the wedding was not Western at all, but the welcome dinner and the rehearsal dinner was the Cowboy Cookout.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's great.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah, and it's great that they came all the way from England to have that Old West experience, so that's wonderful.
Yeah, we had about 40 from England that came for the wedding.
That's great. That's great.
And your staff, again, as I said, your staff just spot on. They were great.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for calling in, Lori, and telling us about your experience at the Tinker Verde Guest Ranch, and we appreciate
thank you. Merry Christmas.
And Merry Christmas. Maybe you'll join us for Christmas brunch. Terry, let's talk a little bit about what actually brought this to my mind. I thought my sister-in-law, my wife, and I were taking my mother-in-law somewhere for Christmas brunch, and we decided on the Tinker Verde Ranch. So I said, let's get Terry in to talk about the Christmas brunch. So tell us what's going on Christmas Day at the Tinker Verde Ranch. Now you're up to three seatings. You might be up to four here in a minute. If,
yeah, the chef might kill me.
Yeah.
So we're going to do three seatings. The noon seating in the main restaurant is mostly ranch guests. We'll have some town guests join us for that one. At 1:15, we'll do another one over in the barn. And then we come back to the main dining room at 2:30. So it'll be a busy few hours, but it's so great having everybody from town come out, experience our food and the ranch and leave happy and content and talking about the next time they want to come out. Yeah. Because we do it for Christmas, we do it for Thanksgiving, we do it for Easter, and we do it for Mother's Day.
Right.
So.
I think I've been at all of those, to be honest with you. They're just a place that we like to go. And not to mention that my house is only 2 miles away, so it's
very
close. Yeah, it's very convenient. Tell us a little bit about when someone does a Christmas brunch out there. What can they expect in terms of the menu and how you present everything and how beautiful it is?
The great part is our chef is very creative and we're changing the menus all the time. So I'm seeing something this year that I haven't seen before. It's a mesquite brisket stew along with rosemary potato leek soup, There's multiple salads. There's a chef's board, charcuterie board, spinach dip. We're doing a Bellini board this year, which is new. We got maple glazed ham and toasted lamb tenderloin, grilled asparagus, eggs Benedict, truffle Parmesan mashed potatoes. And this dish, the pecan sticky bun Payne Perdue, is our chef was in the Iron Chef competition here in Tucson this year. And this dish got her to the competition. So it's absolutely delicious.
That's great. And then you have, obviously, over in the one room there, that huge dessert. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Yeah,
you can spend a week in that room just eating the desserts that are out there. It's amazing.
We end with the sweets, yes.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And the ambiance is just incredible. And like Lori was saying, just the whole, you feel so welcome, and it's so hospitable, and your people are so wonderful, and the food is delicious, and it's a very festive atmosphere and very, very wonderful. So I look forward, my family's going out there, so we look forward to that. Are there any other special events? We talked about to brunch and so forth. Anything coming up for people in Tucson that might be interested in coming out to the ranch in the next year in 2026? What are you looking forward to?
Well, yeah, you know, we talked about the Cottonwoods a little bit. We do a barbecue down there every Wednesday and Saturday, and that's just if you've got guests in from out of town, it's a really fun thing to do, just a local attraction, and people really enjoy that. And anybody from town can come out and do rides or experience any of the activities on the ranch. We limit some things during the holidays just because we have so many people on property, but there's so many fun things to do that guests from town can come out and experience.
What would if you were suggesting someone 3 days, 5 days, 7 days? What's a good time? How long would a staycation be a good number of days to cover all the things that you need to do?
Yeah, minimum five, I think. I see people after 3 days, and we'll see their reviews saying, "Oh, I wish we had stayed longer. I missed so many things. I didn't get a chance to do everything I wanted to do." So, minimum five, seven's great. We've got a guest, a couple that'll be in January 5th, and Doc will be he'll be in for 35 days with his wife.
Wow.
So, yeah, Doc and Andy.
And it's also, not to equate this to this, but it's kind of like a cruise in the sense that you get all your meals. It's all inclusive. You come and you can stay at the ranch the whole entire time and never leave, and still have all your meals taken care of and of all the activities, and then always go out and sit on the lawn and look at the sun go down. It's just an absolutely beautiful experience. So all inclusive.
Absolutely. And we sell it different ways. We sell it as a bed and breakfast. We sell it as room and meals. And then we sell it as all-inclusive. But you're right, Ed. People can come and we'll pick them up at the airport. You don't have to rent a car. We'll come and get you at the airport. And you can stay as active as you want. You can be on 7, 8, 9 activities throughout the day, or you can sit on your porch and enjoy the sun or lay by the pool and just chill.
And if you want to do, if you're interested in maybe sampling some of the other restaurants in Tucson as a city of gastronomy, you can configure your stay so that you're eating at the ranch a couple of times, but then you can also go off and go find some other places that are around that are award-winning and the other Iron Chefs are working at.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and there's so many things to do and see in Tucson. It's a great place also to bring people in from out of town who... you want to treat in a very special way, get them to stay out at the ranch, and then you go visit them and do the activities with them.
I think the ranch and Tucson are very similar. If you experience it once, you're probably coming back,
right?
Because both are so special.
Oh, just a thought popped into my mind. Gift certificates. Can someone come out and prepay something and say, "Hey, we'd like to"? Get a gift certificate for someone to encourage them to come in 2026.
Yeah. And you don't even have to come out. If you call us, we'll take your information, we'll mail the certificate to you,
That's fantastic.
Great Christmas gift.
Yeah. So it's a great place to be and a wonderful wonderful experience. You just I always feel like when I go out there that you're in modern, everything's modern, but you kind of feel like you're taking a step back in time, and it just kind of take a big deep sigh. Ah, oh, this is so awesome.
And it's funny you say that. I watched some of our regular guests who will pick up from the airport and they'll get out of the van and they'll just kind of stop and they'll stretch and there will be that deep sigh and exhale and they say, we're home.
Yeah. Well, you know, this first segment that we have on Friday mornings is called Success, where we talk about the good companies like yours, 157 years as a ranch, and the Coates have had it now for 59 years as owners, single family owning it. How do you define success, Terry?
Boy, success for me, you know, watching our guest reviews and watching the experience that our guests have out at the ranch, it's so rewarding. What we do every day is fun for us, and I think that's reflected on what the guests get to experience. So I call it the best place to be most days.
Yeah, yeah. Except for when you're solving, you know, in any big facility like that, you probably got every week, you probably got something that you have to deal with.
And, oh, and I think in anybody's world, there's going to be things that pop up. But
right.
But
right.
We get to do it out there.
That's great. Well, that's wonderful. We'll see you on Christmas Day. That's Terry Hanley, the managing director of Tanque Verde Ranch. 157 year old ranch and a wonderful, wonderful facility. And I'll be there on Christmas afternoon and having wonderful lunch with you. And
looking
thank you for coming in today.
Thank you, Ed.
All right. This is Success on The Morning Voice. We'll be back after the break with some, let's go bowling. How about that, Matt? Let's go bowling. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. What a great discussion with Tanque Verde Guest Ranch. We were just talking about how beautiful it is out there when the sun's going down and those shadows start
moving. The shadows start getting pronounced and on the mountains, and it's just beautiful out there. Just beautiful.
There's lots of cool things about Tucson. One of the cool things about Tucson is we're going bowling, and that's going to be pretty exciting.
Indeed.
We're going to the Holiday Bowl. I'll be there with bells on.
We have to wait until next year for it, though.
Yeah, that's true. I have to wait till 2026 to go bowling, so don't get it in 2025, but we want to welcome to The Morning Voice, Tony Daniel. He's the Senior Associate Athletic Director of Revenue Generation and Engagement at the University of Arizona Athletic Department. Good morning, Tony.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Great, great. Thank you for coming in. And for listeners who may not know you, can you just introduce yourself a little bit and explain your role as Senior Associate Athletic Director of Revenue and Generation and Engagement at the U of A?
Yeah. Yeah, so my name's Tony Daniel, coming in to Arizona. I've been here about a year and a half now. This role is so interesting, right? College athletics has changed tremendously, you know, just even over the last 5 years and even more so over the last, you know, two with revenue sharing and those types of things. So that's kind of my day-to-day, anything revenue generation, anything helping our fan experience and our student athletes is kind of what I focus on.
That's great. Well, we'll start backwards, and then we'll talk about the bowl. I'll kind of reverse order here on you. Since you talked about revenue generation and what will help athletics in general, what will help the U of A football team, basketball teams, all the major sports that we have represented in the athletic department, you've had a wonderful announcement this last couple of weeks about the new naming of the Arizona Stadium called Casino del Sol Stadium. Can you tell us a little bit about that and that process? Obviously, the whole year and a half that you were here, probably you would have been working on that because that's a major engagement with a wonderful group here in Tucson. Can you tell us a little bit about what that means for Tucson and what that means for the stadium?
Yeah, it's an amazing collaboration between, you know, two Tucson institutions, University of Arizona and Arizona Athletics, and then the Casino del Sol group. We were so excited to make that come to life. And I want to give a shout out to our team, Brian Rooney, Sammy Swiger, Jorge Leyva. They all had huge hands in making that a reality. But really, it's just a great partnership. We're so excited to be involved with the Pascayaki tribe and what they mean to this community. Mm-hmm. There's so much great that comes from that group. When we came to the table and we started discussing it, it was really a no-brainer. They had no reservations. There were details to work out. But what both institutions mean to this community, you know, it was a no-brainer for them, and they were excited to jump on board and start talking about the details.
That's so great. How will that will that affect fan experience? Obviously, there's a monetary gift involved in this, but will the naming of the stadium and their involvement over the next 10 years or so, does that change fan experience, enhance fan experience? How will that affect the local fan?
Yeah, we're always thinking about that, and all of our decisions are one, right, to help our coaches and student athletes, but kind of 1B is making sure our fan experience is top-notch, tops in the Big 12, then tops around the country. So everything that we're doing is focused on that. And so, yeah, we had that this influx here with Casino del Sol and the naming rights, but we also have other opportunities that we'll look at. We just sent out some surveys to our fans, both for Casino del Sol Stadium and the McHale Center.
Mm-hmm.
And our fans are giving feedback now on what they'd like to see, what makes their experiences better, so that we can continue to upgrade our facilities and make those impactful changes to fans and the fan experience, so they have the best time possible when they're coming to U of A events. And so it gives them that opportunity to let their voice be heard. And we're excited. We've been collecting a lot of information, a lot of data, and now we're kind of in the diving in phase and pulling that stuff out to see kind of what changes we can make here in the short term, and then what are going to be, you know, a couple years down the line. So we're excited for that.
Let's pop the roof off of McHale, add 30,000 more seats, and put the roof back on, because having the two men's and women's basketball team and even the volleyball teams doing so well in McHale Center, what a beautiful facility that it is. Packed. Every time you go in there, it's packed to the gills because the teams are doing so well. It's kind of nice to have a number one men's basketball team again.
Oh, you can't beat it. Yeah, when you're the number one team, everybody, we're the hottest ticket in town. It's amazing, and that team is doing well. We're so proud of what they've been able to accomplish, Coach Lloyd and that team. It's been awesome. Yeah, we might have to. That might be our next enhancement, another 30,000 seats or so.
Yeah, I love it. Hey, you know, I just want to point a personal privilege. You know, I've been around the U of A. Obviously, I've been grew up in Tucson, so it's been part of my life, all of my life. I'm a 60-year U of A football fan. I've gone to all the games since I was a little kid, and the nature of the job that I'm in, I've interacted with most of the basketball coaches and the football coaches over the years. I just have to, hats off to the team you have now, the new women's basketball coach is just a wonderful person. Tommy Lloyd is amazing. What a nice guy that guy is. And I just really want to single out Brett Brennan. You know, I've been helping the U of A band raise money for, you know, feed the band and equipment and all the kind of things that we do over the last, since 85, I've been helping. And Brent Brennan is the first football coach that when I asked him for some help, he pulled out his personal checkbook and wrote me a check and said how important the band was to him. And I just, that just goes to the real quality of the person he is, and I'm just so proud of him and the great success that they've had this year.
Yeah, you hit it spot on, right? We're still in the people business at the end of the day, and these coaches are dealing with 18 to, you know, maybe 24-year-olds now, and people want to be around great people at the end of the day, and we've got, you know, those three that you mentioned, but we've got 17 or 18 others that are also amazing and want the best, not only for the U of A, but for these student athletes. They're incredible people. They have so much knowledge. They care about this community. And yeah, to your point, Coach Brennan, just an amazing human being and an amazing football coach as well, obviously leading this turnaround here in year two of his tenure. But yeah, just a stable full of them over at the U of A, which is a great thing to have. And it's an awesome time to be there. And I know the recruits, and I know these players' families, that they're excited to be with these people that we have and these coaches and these mentors that lead our programs.
It's nice to have a Dick Tomey-ish kind of a coach back at the helm. And he's just so, you know, when he hugs his players and so forth, I just think it's the greatest thing to have not so much yelling at them, a little bit more of teaching them how to be good citizens and good people as well. And from a point of personal perspective, I teach at the Eller College, and I get a football player through my program, every once in a while a basketball player through some of my classes, and they are just, they show up to class, they're there every time, they engage, and they just all have just, over the years, my experience with athletes who are students first, coming through the Eller College, have just been great examples for the rest of the students in the Eller College. So, well, we've got a great number one basketball team. The women's team is doing well. The other teams are all, we've national champion, for first time out of the blocks for a couple
triathlon.
And just amazing. Yeah. And over the years, the amount of that's why the road in front of McHale is called National Championship Way, because of the great record. And who'd have thought that in second year in the pack, in the Big 12, that Arizona would be dominating like they have been and doing great in football and great in basketball. It's amazing how college sports brings out the best in some people.
Absolutely. Yeah. This league, the Pac-12, is so difficult, so strong, top to bottom, and for all of our sports. It's been an amazing challenge. But as we always are, we're up for the challenge. Our coaches have taken it in full stride, and our fans have shown up and are taking it in full stride. And it's been awesome to see. And I can't wait for more. We're looking for all kinds of success from all of our teams. And man, the momentum is strong right now with our fall sports, and looking forward to continuing that through the winter and spring.
Yeah. One cool thing I want to mention before we take a quick break, and that is it's great to see Brent Brennan and his wife come to the U of A basketball games and cheer on Tommy and the boys. I just think it's so cool to have him be so engaged in the other sports. He goes to the other teams as well and watches other games, whether it be tennis or beach volleyball, whatever. It's nice to have, be isolated in an ivory tower, but to actually be a people's coach, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah, he truly loves it. He loves seeing Coach Lloyd coach, and that's how, you know, these coaches get better too. They love going to watch what other coaches are doing and how they're treating their players. And when you're the number one team in the country, you're obviously doing something right.
Yeah.
So there's lots to be learned, and all of our coaches are that way. It's an awesome thing to see.
Great. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back after the break and talk to Tony Daniel, Senior Associate Athletic Director at the University of Arizona, about the thing that's near and dear to my heart, and that is the Holiday Bowl coming up in San Diego on January 2nd. We'll talk a little bit about what that means for the program and what that means for Arizona fans, and we're going to go to University of Arizona West, San Diego, California, where half of us go for summer vacation. It'll be nice to go there during the holiday break, and we'll talk a little bit more about the Holiday Bowl. This is The Morning Voice on KVOI. We'll be back after the break. Well, it's a beautiful 82-degree white Christmas we have in Tucson, Arizona. It's amazing. We're a week out from Christmas, and we're at 82 degrees. What an amazing place.
No snow, but a sandstorm, as
they
say.
There you go. Our guest is Tony Daniel. He's the Senior Associate Athletic Director of Revenue and Revenue Generation and Engagement at the University of Arizona Athletics. Tony, what an exciting season for the football team. They finished the season with a really unexpected record. They could have won two more games. They lost them in the last second in overtime. And wow, what a great job the team did. And that means we're on the way to the Holiday Bowl in San Diego at 6 p.m. kickoff time on January 2nd. Tell us what that berth in the Holiday Bowl means to not only the program, but to the community at large.
Yeah, it's amazing. This team and the way this community has rallied around them has been special. Obviously, not the season that anyone wanted last year, but to be frank with you, that this group didn't talk about that much. They talked about getting better and those type of things. They didn't talk about last year. They talked about how do we make this year the best for our group, for our seniors, and for all of us that have put so much time and energy and effort into that. And boy, did it pay off. You talked about the two really close games. A couple plays go differently there. It's an even better season. But this group, with 9 wins, going for number 10, only this will be the fifth team in school history that would have 10 wins if they're able to get a victory in the Holiday Bowl. So a lot still to play for. And man, this group is just so resilient. They fought through some injuries this year from a couple key positions. They beat some really good teams, ranked teams on the road, including that little school up north. You know, so they just did so much great. Got the cup back to Tucson, and you're just so proud of them and all that they were able to accomplish this year. There's so many great moments from this year, and these guys have earned this bowl trip, and we're excited for our fans to be able to experience it with us.
Right, not to single any one player out, but I am going to. I just think it's wonderful to watch Noah Fifita his freshman year and what he was doing. And then last year, of course, there was a little bit of a struggle there. But, man, has he blossomed in his junior year. And what an amazing season he has had and picking apart those defenses and just the receivers that they have and the running backs. And, oh, my gosh, I'm a former lineman myself, and I spend half the game watching the linemen play. And I have to say the offensive line is amazing in those – fast defensive linemen, man, they are fast. They remind me of the Desert Swarm of old, of how fast they are getting into the backfield. And so it's just all the players are clicking on all cylinders. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's amazing, right? We talked kind of at the open about the revenue share and what that means for players. You know, there's about 50 new players on this team. And this group gelled so quickly. You talk about the offensive line, you know, three new starters from that group. They just gelled so quickly. And that's such a hard thing to do, right? Coaches used to spend 4 years developing players and getting them to gel that quickly. And now you have to do it in, you know, kind of a 6 to 9 month time period, you know, and it's such a testament to what this coaching staff has been able to do and what these players have been able to do and the buy-in that they have. That offensive line and defensive line group specifically, you know, Coach Gonzalez leading the defense, kind of had a new coach, new scheme to learn in that short amount of time. So just overall, there's so many great stories from this team. There's so much to be proud of this group. And we just hope that it continues to carry on, because it's, when football is right in Tucson, it makes this town really buzz, and it's just so exciting for all U of A fans around the country and especially here in Arizona.
There's a few tickets left for the Holiday Bowl game. Where can a person go to get Holiday Bowl tickets, and how can they support the team going to the January 2nd Bowl?
Yeah, you know the U of A people were excited. We sold out of our allotment in less than like 17 hours total. So that was amazing. But there are still available through the Bowl website and then secondary websites as well, such as SeatGeek. That's who we officially drive all of our partnerships through. So still, there's not many. There's not many tickets available, but some still left on the U of A side. And so you can go directly through the Bowl website or any of your favorite secondary markets, SeatGeek or those. So there's some available, not many. They're going to have some for walk-up if it doesn't sell out, but they're hoping for a sellout the way things are trending.
That's pretty exciting. And we are going to be 10 wins this season, because we're going to beat SMU and we're going to come back victorious, and it's going to be a great, great time. Hey, I will close with one question. You know, I'm a little bit ahead of myself here. A wonder starts in just a few minutes, where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona. And normally I would ask you how you define success, but you've already defined that. So I'll ask you, just from your own perspective, being here for about a year or so, what is one thing on campus that you think is just full of wonder?
Oh, man. We work since being here, we've tried to build as many relationships with our campus partners as possible. I think our campus at large is, but I think we've been trying to, reignite what the athletic voice means, right, across our campus.
And you're doing a great job of that. It's awesome. It's awesome.
With so many partners. So yeah.
Bear down, and thank you, Tony, for being with us. That's we got to go to break. So that's Tony Daniel, Senior Associate Athletic Director at the University of Arizona. And thank you. We'll see you at the bowl game, Tony.
Thank you. Bear down.
Bear down. Good morning and welcome to the Morning Voice. I am Dr. Ed Ackerley. I was talking to Terry from the Tancaverde Ranch about athletics being the front porch of University of Arizona, that people see and hear about the number one basketball team, and we see and hear about the football team going to the Holiday Bowl and how wonderful that is. But I maintain that there's lots of things, good things going on at the University of Arizona that a lot of people don't know about, and that's the purpose of Wonder, to talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona. And so in this past year, we've had about 200 guests in from the University of Arizona talking about the good things going on at the university. And we got another one here today, and we're so pleased to welcome a U of A alum, Dr. Kevin White. He's an associate professor of medicine at the University of Arizona College of Medicine. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you. Hey, I do have to tell you that Wonder is sponsored by Caruso's Italian Restaurant on 4th Avenue. Been there for 93 years, and Hughes Federal Credit Union. And so, Dr. White, to begin with, could you tell us a little bit about your own role at the University of Arizona College of Medicine and the clinical work that you do?
Absolutely, yeah. So as you mentioned, I am a graduate of the University of Arizona.
Did that in 3 years, you said, right?
Just a little more than 3 years. And I, when I finished here at the U of A, I got the opportunity to join the Air Force, go to a military medical school in Bethesda, Maryland. I had a 24-year career in the military, which I retired this May. And then I had the wonderful opportunity to get recruited and join the University of Arizona College of Medicine, which was a real honor for me, being a graduate of the undergraduate program here. And so where I work is in the pulmonary allergy, critical care, and sleep division, and I'm an allergist. So the clinical work that I do here right now is seeing patients with airway allergy, asthma, food allergies, drug allergies, you name it. If it's an allergy, we see it. And I'm proud to be part of the faculty here and doing a lot of clinical and educational work.
Well, two things. Thanks for being a wildcat now and forever, always a wildcat. And secondly, thank you for your quarter century of service to our country. We really appreciate that and appreciate you for doing that. So what is an allergy? You know, that's a kind of a silly question to ask, but, you know, my kids had allergies. I probably have allergies. What are allergies?
It's interesting. I mean, an allergy is an immune response that basically the body does to fight something that normally is well tolerated. So, I mean, a great example is, you know, food. So, I mean, we all eat. Some people, their immune system reacts against a food that it thinks is harmful. Right. So, you know, peanut allergy would be the most common thing I think most of us would think of. So most people can tolerate peanut, but some can't. And there are lots of theories as to why that happens. We've gone through a lot of theories over the years, some of which has many of our listeners might be aware of the hygiene hypothesis, that perhaps in Western societies we've made ourselves so clean and so unexposed, you know, relatively speaking, to infections, that our immune systems get a little bored, and certain, you know, genetic influences will then lead some people to become allergic. So fundamentally an allergy is an immune reaction that is a negative reaction to something that normally we tolerate, whether it be food, pollen, drug, many different things.
So what first drew you to a career in allergies and looking at allergies as a place that you might specialize?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think allergy is one of the smallest medical specialties. So a lot of medical students and doctors in training don't get a lot of exposure. Right. I had allergies myself growing up in Tucson. Right. Grass allergy is prominent for me. And the military, I'll go back to my military career. So the military actually has the two largest allergy training programs in the United States. So both the Air Force and the Army train a large number of allergists. So when I was doing internal medicine training, I rotated in the allergy clinic in San Antonio. And I was just amazed. I originally wanted to be a forest ranger. So then I transitioned to medicine. And the interaction with the botany, the education that we do with patients with allergic disease, it just drew me in. I did the training program, and I've been doing allergies since 2008.
Interesting. And why is Tucson, I mean, maybe you know, we're the center of the universe and the whole universe revolves around Tucson, Arizona. I get that. But there is a kind of a common thought that there's a lot of allergies that, does that have to do with the dust and the, and what we were exposed to in terms of botany, like you say, the plants and so forth, and just being in the desert? Why is Tucson, at least the urban myth is that there's a lot of allergies that resonate in Tucson. Why is that?
Yeah. Having lived in many different areas around the world, I feel like every place I live, there are many patients who feel like this is the worst place they've ever lived with their allergies.
Right.
So I think places like Tucson are mild in climate. Mm-hmm. So we don't have the hard and fast seasons. We don't have the hard freeze. So if you look at the pollen like map over the year, which is originally collected in Potomac Hill many years ago, we have, for example, ragweed. Normally, for most of our listeners who might be coming from other places around the country, they're used to ragweed pollinating in the fall. Mm-hmm. So, you know, after the summer, before the hard freeze, the ragweed is in the air. People are miserable. In Tucson, the ragweed pollinates in the spring. And then most recently, like last month, we had a pollen that was collected from cedar trees. So in November, normally many of our listeners who are from other parts of the country, like the Midwest or Northeast, expect trees to pollinate in the spring. Mm-hmm. So one of the issues with Tucson is that pretty much every month, with the exception of maybe, you know, December, January, there's some pollen in the air released from plants that in other parts of the countries have a more discrete season.
Right.
And we don't have that long break in the winter, which makes it nice to be outside.
Right.
But also exposes us to pollen.
And today would be a good example, 82 degrees today. And so, you know, there's not the hard freeze or the snow or anything that would cause some of that to kind of go away for a couple of months. It's probably out there and the plants are doing their thing because they think it's spring. So, yeah. So, so you kind of answered this question, but many people assume that allergies are seasonal annoyances, but they can be conditions that can go on year round. And, and if they're left untreated, they exacerbate over time, right?
Yes, yes. I mean, you mentioned dust, and I think a lot of patients who have really irritated eyes and nose and airways from their allergies, let's say to ragweed, they'll also be really sensitive to irritant things. So like the dust storms or things like that here, you know, if your airway is already primed to be irritated and you know, inflamed, then those things will make it worse. So yeah, and some people are allergic to their pets. Some people are allergic to you know, insects like dust mites that live in their home. So there are plenty of reasons for some people to unfortunately be miserable all year round.
Let's just take, for instance, like your home. How do you kind of, obviously you try to keep it clean, but how do you what do you recommend for people who are allergy prone or experiencing allergies? How do you keep your kind of your space, your living space, kind of clear and air quality so that you can mitigate as much of that as possible?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think over the years, you know, many clinicians, many companies have been interested in what can we do to lower our allergy exposure. And a lot of times, so there is research that shows, if you have no carpet and your house is immaculate, then the allergy content in your home is going to be low. But most of us don't necessarily live that way. We like to have the windows open, of course, in Tucson. We like to have pets. Some people, you like to have rugs if you don't have carpet. Mm-hmm. So really the main thing is, I mean, for most people, is just using a really high quality filter for your air conditioner unit. Having as the low amount of carpet that you can. And then if you have pets, that would be the one thing where if you're allergic to your pets, it's recommended to keep them out of the bedroom and to use an air filter that will purify the air in that room.
Yeah.
But some of the things you mentioned, just common sense things like keeping things clean and dust-free, are good.
We're talking with Dr. Kevin White, who is an associate professor of medicine at the University of Arizona College of Medicine and a specialist in allergies. And so for people struggling with chronic allergies, when should they consider seeing a specialist rather than just going to the local dollar store and getting an allergy medicine and hopefully to mitigate? Because I'm a layman. I'm a doctor. I'm not that kind of a doctor. I'm a different kind of a doctor. But But I would think that if you're just trying to stop the sniffles or whatever and taking some medicine, you might be actually masking the actual root cause of what's happening and kind of mitigating it, but not really getting to the core of what's happening. So what would you recommend someone, when do they go see a specialist?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think one thing in the allergy world is many of our medications over the years have now become available over the counter, mm-hmm. which is good and bad. I mean, it's good because patients can access them without a prescription, but then I think it's confusing because I think you go to your local CVS, Walgreens, what have you, and you've got just a litany of things without any real guidance about what to do. So I think for people who are suffering from seasonal allergies or pet allergies that have, GIs, sneezing, mucus production, all those sorts of things. There are two main classes of medicines that they should be thinking of, steroids and antihistamines. And so nasal steroid would be, things like fluticasone, mometasone that you can find at the allergy counter. Antihistamine, there's nasal antihistamines like azelastine. There's also oral antihistamines. And if you're taking those three medicines, so a nasal steroid, nasal antihistamine, oral antihistamine, and that's not working for you, then I think we should test you, consider doing allergy shots, that sort of thing.
I've often thought that if you are doing, say, those three things, do they ever cancel out each other? One trying to do one thing, one trying to do the other thing, and they're kind of canceling each other out? And I don't really know.
No, they complement each other. Okay. I have a lot of patients who will only try one thing at a time, right. And they're miserable, and I see them, and then we just combine these things. Right. They are complementary, and for many patients, that does the trick. But okay. It is annoying. I mean, right. I do tell people a lot of the things that I tell people to do, spraying things in their nose, right. using salt water solutions.
Yeah.
A lot of people are like, I don't want to do that,
right,
but
right.
it is necessary.
Right, right. We'll come back after the break and talk some more with Dr. Kevin White, Associate Professor of Medicine and a specialist in allergies at the University of Arizona College of Medicine. We'll be back right after the break. This is The Morning Voice. Merry Christmas and welcome back to The Morning Voice. This is Wonder, where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona. Our discussion is with Dr. Kevin White, who is an associate professor of medicine and on the clinical scholar track. He's at the University of Arizona College of Medicine, and he is a 25-year veteran of the Air Force. Thank you again for your service. And you're a specialist in allergies. And so today, you'll go back to the facility at U of A North, and you'll be seeing patients all day long today and kind of helping them through their allergies. So your basic duty is to diagnose allergies and how we're going to treat them, right?
Yes, that's correct. We see a variety of allergic disease, anything from what we call allergic rhinitis, so the typical things that we think of with hay fever, to we do actually a lot of asthma. So we're partnered with the pulmonary department. Mm-hmm. And so not every allergy practice focuses as much on asthma as the Tucson, Banner U of A allergy immunology clinic. And right. part of the reason for that is the history of studying asthma in Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
And so back in 1980, there was a study called the Tucson Children's Respiratory Study that was started at the University of Arizona. And that was one of these landmark studies where they followed many children mm-hmm. with asthma, over 1,000 over time, to figure out the different types of asthma that children develop, how it goes into adolescent and teen and adulthood. So Tucson has a long tradition of following patients with asthma, learning about asthma. And our department, the allergy department, also partnered with the pulmonary department.
Right.
We continue in that tradition. So we see a lot of that, as well as other, like I mentioned, other allergies, like food allergies and things
right.
like that.
And Dr. Tsai is certainly an advocate for you guys and getting you out in front of the community. What are some common misconceptions people might have about their own allergies or allergies in general, and then the treatments that are available?
I think one misconception I encounter frequently is, say, a food allergy. Say an adult or a child has a reaction to a food. Use the example of peanut. Let's say a child eats peanut butter, and breaks out in hives. I think many people are concerned, appropriately so, and they think that the next reaction will be worse, mm-hmm. and then the next reaction after that will be worse, so that every time the person or child or right. adult is exposed, it gets worse. And actually, what we know is that if the conditions are the same, such that the individual eats approximately the same amount and they're in sort of the same, you know, they're not like horribly sick with the flu or something else that's stressing their system, actually the reactions can be consistent. So a lot of times the, you know, a reaction that you have today will be the similar reaction that you'll have, you know, a month from now if you get exposed, which may not alleviate all the concern.
Right.
But that is one thing that I think people worry about is, oh, the next time is going to be worse. Right. And some of the way they studied this is they actually had like adults with a peanut allergy, you know, doing research studies, and they would give them amounts of peanut and expose them to different stresses like a treadmill test, sleep deprivation. And they actually find that there are certain conditions that can make your allergic reaction worse, like if your body is stressed by right. infection, vigorous exercise, or sleep deprivation. But if all the conditions are the same and you eat the same amount, often the reactions will stay the same. And this goes for many things. So I think that's one of the ones that I think about when you bring up that question.
Right.
As well as the thing we talked about before, like combining your allergy medicines is better than trying each one alone.
Are there some exciting things on the horizon for research into allergy cures and allergy maintenance and management and so yeah. forth that maybe over the last 20, 30 years has come to the forefront?
Yeah, so treatment of allergic disease, there are three main categories I think of treatments. So there's the kind that we talked about before. There's a lot of these over-the-counter medications, which are really good for allergies, antihistamines, nasal sprays, and that sort of thing. There's also allergy shots. Now, that's an old therapy. That's been around for over 100 years, where we desensitize people to the things they might be allergic to. And then there's the new medications, which are called biologics. So these are medications that we see on TV for lots of different conditions. Allergic disease, asthma is one of those conditions. Mm-hmm. And these are medications that are usually injectable, where they target very specific chemicals in your body that are produced, in this case, you know, from allergic disease, mm-hmm. To try to reduce that inflammation. And so those are the medications that are kind of, they've been coming over the last 10 to 15 years. We have more and more that are approved each year. And there's studies going on in the pulmonary allergy department here at the University of Arizona looking at new molecules for the study treatment of asthma. So there's a lot of exciting things. There's a big cost difference between a lot of these things. A lot of the new biologic therapies are very expensive.
Right.
So it's interesting because you've got really inexpensive things over the counter, really expensive things on the horizon. But that's kind of the way of drug development. That's just the way things are.
So if one has allergies or has a child or grandkid with allergies, and you want to manage the day to day, especially during peak seasons, what advice do you give them? How do they mitigate the allergies? And at what time do you throw in the red flag and say, I'm going to go see Dr. Kevin White? How do you kind of manage the day-to-day?
Yeah, I think if the over-the-counter medications or medications that your pediatrician or, you know, family doctor, your primary care provider are not working, that's a good time to see an allergist. Also, if you're not sure what's causing your symptoms, so, you know, if you're like, let's say it's a family that, you know, a lot of them have allergies and they want to get a pet. So they may want to know, like, hey, does this family member who has symptoms mm-hmm. around pollen, is it safe for me to get a cat, you know,
right.
a dog, something that might introduce those symptoms and then be, you know, with the family for, you know, the length
right.
of time, the life of that animal. So, so I think if standard, you know, over-the-counter or treatment through your primary care is not working, that's a great time to see us. We can test you, see what you might be allergic to, and educate you. I think that's the key thing about an allergy specialist, doctors in general, is that a lot of what we want to do is educate people.
Right. So we talk about this being wonder when we talk about the good things going on, and certainly what you guys are doing at Banner and the University of Arizona Medical School and Department and all the things that are going on that are helping individuals live a better quality of life. What's one thing that you think is full of wonder in your time back here at the U of A? You were here as a young guy and now you're back a quarter century later. What's one thing that's full of wonder for you at the University of Arizona?
I think what I have encountered since being back, I mean, it was a long time ago when I was a student here, and I think now being back on faculty, what impresses me is just the amount of collaboration between mm-hmm. the basic science departments and the College of Medicine, and now our partnership with Banner on the, mm-hmm. on the medical side. So I think, like, you know, the College of Engineering collaborates with the College of Surgery, you know, the surgical department is one example, and there's just so much cross collaboration between our departments, I think that makes it one big wildcat family.
Right. So if you have allergies, you can live a good, happy life. Just manage the allergies and see a specialist if you need to, and you can help them maintain their status quo so that they're not miserable half the year, right?
That's right.
That's great. That's Dr. Kevin White. He is an associate professor of medicine at the University of Arizona College of Medicine up there at Campbell and Allen Road, that beautiful facility, the cancer center up there. As you can tell by the cuts on my face, I'm a frequent visitor of the skin cancer department up there. It's a beautiful facility. And so I got to ask you, are you going to the bowl game?
I don't know.
We're trying to track it.
I would love to.
Yeah. So
I don't have tickets yet.
Yeah. Hey, Wonder is sponsored by our good friends at Caruso's Italian Restaurant on 4th Avenue. It's unbelievable, but they've been there for 93 years. And Hughes Federal Credit Union, our good friends at Hughes. We want to thank you, Dr. White, for coming in. We'll come back and talk a little bit about master plans and what the University of Arizona is going to look like in the next 100 years. We'll do that with Joshua Wright. This is The Morning Voice on KVOI. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. This is Wonder, where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona, sponsored by Caruso's Italian Restaurant on historic 4th Avenue and Hughes Federal Credit Union. What a great discussion today with Tankaverde Guest Ranch so far, talking a little bit about the U of A going to the Holiday Bowl. We just got a great discussion with Dr. Kevin White about allergies and a day like today when it's going to be 82 degrees, people will be sniffling probably because the plants think it's time to time to blossom, and even though it is middle of December. So. We're going to talk a little bit now about the launch of the University of Arizona campus master plan process, and our guest is Joshua Wright, who is the Chief Facilities and Planning Officer out of the Office of President and the University of Arizona. So good morning to you, Joshua Wright.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me.
So you're also, Kevin White was an undergrad at the University of Arizona and went away for 25 years with the Air Force and came back as a clinician working out at the Cancer Center on allergies and those kind of things. Well, you too were a University of Arizona Wildcat.
That's true. I'm a multi-time Wildcat, so I have two undergrad degrees and a graduate degree from U of A. I just couldn't get enough.
Great. What's your master's degree in?
Public administration.
Oh, great, great. Great program.
Yes, it was wonderful. Program.
And that led you to just a little bit about you. You got to be a city manager for a while, so you were up north for a couple of years doing that, right?
Yeah, I kind of went all around the state. I started my municipal career straight out of working for U of A at the town of Marana, so just mm-hmm. north of us, and then became a city manager. So I was in Wickenburg as city manager for 5.5 years and then spent in total about 8.5 years with the city of Chandler, great city up in the Phoenix area, and was assistant city manager and then city manager there immediately before coming back to U of A.
That's great. You know, Wickenburg. The great story of Wickenburg for my family is my dad's mom's families grew up. My mom and dad were born in Needles, California, on the Colorado River, and to get to Needles, California, to go there for summer, we would go there in the summertime for boating on the river and all that. We'd stop in Wickenburg, Arizona, at the A&W root beer stand.
Yep.
And it was always a big treat for us little guys to stop at the A&W in Wickenburg, Arizona. So fond memories of Wickenburg. So
that's great.
So what is a master plan? When you talk about a master plan for a big university that's got a multi-billion-dollar budget, what does a campus master plan mean?
Absolutely. So we have a requirement, actually, from the Arizona Board of Regents, our governing body, to do a campus master plan on roughly a 10-year horizon. It's not quite as hard and fast a requirement as you get with a city or a county. You know, the mm-hmm. city just approved their general plan, county approved their comp plan, but similar idea, where you really have a built environment master plan of the physical space in your community. And so for the campus, in this case, we're focusing on our Tucson campus, although we do some master planning for our other campuses as well. Mm-hmm. But what's it going to look like? So how does it physically lay out? How do we take the goals, the strategic plan that's been established for the institution, in this case, we call it our strategic imperatives that President Garamella rolled out earlier this year, and translate that into a vision for the mm-hmm. built environment that we work in? So that includes everything from where the buildings are and what they're used for, how we assign space. It includes how we move around the campus, so mobility and bike and ped facilities mm-hmm. and transportation requirements. It includes amenities. It includes not only our academic and research spaces, but where do we put things like dining halls, and where do we put things like rec centers, and how do we use those facilities to create a certain experience and a quality of life within the campus that really helps us achieve what we're all about as an institution.
And then near and dear to all of us, parking garages, so we can
Absolutely.
Have more parking. That's one of the biggest issues that has been for the last 100 years on campus, is where to park and how to get easily to places. I would say over the last couple of years, you know, things change. You know, we saw the activity in Brown University this past week, but you know, security has been a big issue on college campuses across the country. And I know that Steve Patterson out of the public safety office and that crew had did a great kind of inventory of how is the U of A doing in terms of security, and the 31 different things were implemented. I think it's now up to about 50 or 60 things that they've implemented. And I've seen the change just as a teacher at the Eller College over the last 35 years. Locks on doors and the alert monitors in the classrooms, and the just a focus on security. And so as the university evolves, you have to take that into consideration. What are the needs of the current campus and the future of what students need? And you know, maybe tables and classrooms that are stuck to the ground and are not movable, or maybe isn't exactly what we need in this era of collaborative learning. So mm-hmm. just spaces, how do we configure the learning spaces? So all these things have to be taken into consideration, right?
Absolutely, yeah. You mentioned safety, which is absolutely core to what we do. If you don't feel safe on campus, then really it's hard to accomplish any other goal if you don't have that basic sense of security. Steve Patterson and his team, we work together all the time. He's a core part of this process as well in developing a master plan. And I do expect that a lot of the recommendations and a lot of the findings that come from the plan will speak to our safety goals as an institution. We already work together on a regular basis, collaborating on everything from traffic safety mm-hmm. to the physical security. You mentioned access control to our buildings and grounds, and how we know who's on campus and how we make sure that everybody feels that they have the resources they need to be safe. So that will certainly be a core factor of what we do. And then absolutely, we actually have an entire department that reports to me called Space Strategy and Management. So about mm-hmm. How we assign the physical space. And I think it's really important that we're doing the master plan at this time in history too, because so much of how we use buildings mm-hmm. and space has changed post-pandemic.
Right.
You know, people work in very different ways than they used to, and that's mm-hmm. great. It's not a matter of productivity, but we can reimagine spaces that mm-hmm. once were solely dedicated or assumed to be for a certain purpose. You can say, well, what if we did more with that now? Or maybe we put a couple of different types of groups in there, or right. maybe that space gets converted to something else entirely different, mm-hmm. but we still keep that campus feel. And we still keep some of those great traditions alive with some of the beautiful buildings that we have there.
We have a beautiful building, the Eller College. The McClelland Hall is a beautiful building, and the lower floor there is where the majority of the classrooms are. And they're beautiful, but they're in that tiered, you know, they're tiered, and they're kind of like an amphitheater. And they have, in many cases, the tables are attached to the ground, and the chairs move. The chairs used to be attached too, but now the chairs move, so you can do a little bit of collaborative. And we have one classroom that's glassed in, that it's more like a laboratory, and you walk by and a little jealous sometimes of some of those teachers that are teaching in there. But the needs of students has changed in just the short 35 years I've been there. The way they receive information, the way they study, and the way they collaborate. When I started 35 years ago, stand up in the front of the room and talk to them 32 times and give them a degree, give them a grade, and on they go. Now it's the reverse. The students are up in the front, and the students are collaborating with small groups, and the students are working in more of a collaborative effort. And so having, you know, desks that are stuck to the ground is all part of this changing environment of the campus academic community.
It really is. Yeah, the way that we use classrooms and space is totally different. Yeah, even since I went to school there. So as you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, I used to have to go buy books,
right?
I'd have to go down to the lower
level.
I remember getting lost the first time.
Right.
That I was probably the last group that went to the old student union
right.
for probably the very beginning. And then by the time I came back from orientation and went back as a freshman, the new union was already starting to come out of the ground. Mm-hmm. And you had to go find the bookstore and actually go through the stacks of textbooks and acquire them. Well, of course, everything is digital now, which is great. That's phenomenal. But that's another good example of how the model has changed. That entire lower floor of the bookstore is now being used for other things. Yes. And that's the campus store is amazing. We don't even call it a bookstore anymore. Right. We call it the campus store. But what
and,
do we do?
And, with, and Peter's reserve of textbooks is about as big as the
that's
studio
right,
here.
That's right. Yeah.
It's pretty small what he has to work with. And there's a huge computer Mac store
that's right.
On half of that. And plus he also has a space that is really awesome, a community space that he's turned that into.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So what do we, you know, what's the long-term goal with that? You know, how do we use that space to maximum advantage of the student experience, to our research objectives, to creating this great community engagement that we want to have when you step foot on the university campus.
So obviously the highlight of coming on and getting down maybe on either on Park Avenue looking to the east or getting on Campbell and looking to the west, you see the beautiful Old Main. It's a beautiful landmark in the middle of campus. It's where the president's office is. It's kind of the master hub of everything. And, you know, when I was going to school there, it was kind of beaten down and pretty well used. And in the recent decade, it's obviously upped. It's absolutely gorgeous in there now. And the meeting spaces in there are amazing. And it's a beautiful place. But using that as an example, there are some historic buildings that are on campus that have been around for 100 years or more. How do you keep that historic character of this tradition of legacy, perhaps, and move it forward into modern education, modern research, and what the techniques that you'll need in modern? How do you kind of balance those two things?
Yeah, I think a lot of times historic preservation, when we use that term, it's misunderstood. We tend to, first of all, think that anything old is automatically historic, and that's not necessarily true. You have to look at what really is worth preserving. And a lot of the times that comes from the architecture, that comes from the artwork that goes on, it comes from how the space was designed. You're absolutely right. We have some phenomenal buildings, Old Main being a great example of a building that was repurposed, keeping the original outside structure intact, keeping the overall look and feel of it, but then making the interior a modern use building, and it had turned out great. We have many other examples of that. The old chemistry building has been not only renovated internally, but added onto, which is also an acceptable way to approach things. You can look at our Bear Down Gymnasium, which has become part of a student success district.
Right.
So it's not just a standalone gym anymore that has limited use. Now it is part of a whole system of how we work with students and faculty and create a certain quality of life on campus. So those are the kind of examples of it's not just taking a building and preserving it, like you're just going to keep it as an artifact or tearing it down. It's how do you take the existing footprint of the space, take the pieces that are significant architecturally and historically, and then reimagine it for a new generation of people so it actually means something to them all over again. It's really about the experience you have in that space.
Great. Our guest on Wonder is Joshua Wright. He's the Chief Facilities and Planning Officer for the Office of President at the University of Arizona, talking about the master plan for the next decade or two. And we'll come back after the break and talk a little bit more about what the U of A is going to look like in the next 10 years. This is The Morning Voice on KVOI. Welcome back to The Morning Voice on this wonderful Friday before Christmas. Merry Christmas to everybody. This will be our last show before the Christmas time shows up.
Yeah.
So Merry Christmas to you, Matt.
Merry Christmas, Dad.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to it. Most important day of the year is the day after, which is my birthday. But
of course, the day you get the other shoe falls.
The other shoe, yeah, exactly, exactly.
Listeners, be familiar with that story.
Yeah, and you know, also it is awesome that we're going to the U of A bowl game and being the number one basketball team in the country. It's a great time to be a Wildcat. It's my friend Jim Livingood used to say, it's a great day to be a Wildcat.
Indeed.
So yeah, our guest is Joshua Wright. He's the Chief Facilities and Planning Officer at the University of Arizona, and we're talking about implementing the master plan, the required plan to what would it look like in 10, 15 years, maybe 50 years, 100 years, what will the U of A look like for changing environment and changing academics and research. So who has a voice in shaping as you're researching what you want to do and how you're going to prioritize things? Who's helping you? Whose voice is being heard?
Absolutely. So it is intended to be an inclusive plan from day one. That's very important to me that we do this in a transparent way. So we actually have a website set up where you can see everything that's going on, every presentation that we give, minutes from all the meetings we have, anything that we do as drafts. It's masterplan.arizona.edu. But we are deliberately building a plan that is inclusive of a wide, wide variety of voices. So that's everybody that's certainly on campus. So academic enterprise, your research enterprise, your infrastructure people, your technology people. We have a lot of subgroups where we actually invite different areas and say, come in and talk with our consultants and us, and let's really hear what's on your mind as your priorities. We also then have outside stakeholders that are important too. So the city of Tucson, Pima County, we want to make sure that even though our plan is for us and then, right. you know, the U of A is somewhat sovereign, if you will, but it should integrate with the broader environment right. around us. We're a critical part of what makes this community so special. So we want to make sure it's an integrated plan. Neighbors, neighboring neighborhood associations or other types of properties immediately adjacent to our campus periphery. We want to make sure they're at the table, and we'll be inviting them early next year to comment. We've had some input with them already in the past. And then actually even the development community, something different we want to try this time is, hey, let's invite people that actually invest in this community and people that build stuff. And let's let them see what our vision is, and let's hear their feedback on how that integrates with the overall built environment of this area.
And even Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, because as you build buildings, the taller they go, the more they got to be concerned about the flight patterns and so forth. Mm-hmm. And we've had that for decades about
That's right.
how to manage the tall buildings and the planes going overhead. And, you know, both Davis-Monthan and the U of A are the two big elephants in the room. That's what... the city is built around those two elements, and so they have to work well together. Mm-hmm. So as you reach out to the city of Tucson and to the stakeholders around, it's important then to kind of integrate the development of the campus into what the neighborhood and the surrounding is. So probably the biggest obvious thing is those student housing on the west side of campus. Mm-hmm. There's about six or eight of those large apartment complex buildings that are 10, 15 stories tall now. Mm-hmm. And that's a good example of how you integrate development along with also meeting the needs of the neighborhoods.
That's right. And you have to realize in most cases, most people driving through town don't know where U of A starts right. and the city of Tucson begins.
Right.
We own some of the streets and we maintain them. The city does with other ones. Right. It's an integrated system.
Right.
And so trying to plan in a vacuum, I think, is a fool's errand.
Yeah.
So it's great timing because the city and the county both have brand new adopted master plans. The city of Tucson just got voter approval on theirs. So this is a great time for us to launch ours, and everything is fresh and new with their plans, and so we can make sure that we're integrated. I would say even beyond the plan, we are working very hard to try to collaborate as much as possible with all
great.
Of our infrastructure.
Well, good luck to you with the process. A former city manager, it's a good place because the city of Tucson is big, but so is the University of Arizona. It's like its own little city. Joshua Wright, Chief Facilities and Planning Officer at the University of Arizona and the Master Plan. Bear down, we'll see you at the bowl game, right?
Bear down, we'll see you there. Thanks for
all
having
right.
me.
Merry Christmas, everybody. This is The Morning Voice on KVOI. We'll see you next year.